Hello, and welcome to the New Academy podcast series. I'm Dave Morris.
And I'm Mary Lucille Hayes. It's the beginning of a new year, and our department has hired several new lecturers to teach in our program. In this special, longer episode, we're going to meet five of them.
We're happy to welcome John Dudek, Patrick Fadley, Pallavi Gupta, Kate Norcross, and Daniel Roche into our motley cohort of non-tenure faculty. Over the past 2 weeks, at least one of the two of us met with each of them to record brief interviews. We hope these conversations will give you some idea of who our new non-tenure faculty are, and we'd encourage you to engage with our new NTTs about their teaching, research, and creative work.
We'll start with John Dudek. Dave and I both met with John in the first week of class to learn a little about his poetry and his recent teaching experiences.
Yeah, so my name is John Dudek. This is my first year as a non-tenure track lecturer at the University of Illinois, though I did a few years ago get my MFA here in poetry, and then immediately after that I got a Master of Science in Library and Information Science at the iSchool as well. So during that time, certainly during the MFA, I was teaching Rep 105 and CW classes. During the iSchool, I was teaching library instruction sessions as part of the UGL. After that, for last year, I was teaching in a similar role at Purdue University, teaching freshman comp and freshman comp online, which is pretty different kind of series of lesson plans. But it was interesting and fun. It was a heck of a commute, but it was ultimately a good thing.
Yeah. And what are you teaching here? Mostly Rhett?
So here I'm teaching Rhett 105. I'm also teaching BTW 263, which is a social media management and web development class, which will be the first time for me, but it kind of lets me draw on some of my experience in the library world, because that's becoming a larger and larger presence of the way they interact with the public. So I'm pretty excited for that, even though I'm not necessarily a social media buff or nerd or anything else myself.
You don't run your own Instagram empire.
No, not now. I have an Instagram, but that's the utter extent of it. So it'll be interesting.
How do you see your creative work dovetailing with your teaching work here?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, as a poet, that's still how I define myself in polite company. I think so much about process that I think it actually translates really well to the composition classroom, where we're really trying to, like, have students really evaluate what the hell they're actually doing when they sit down to write or even say that they're writing. So for me, the very fact that I'm constantly trying to, like, pick apart what I'm doing so I can be more productive, I think that actually lets me be kind of not just like an instructor, but in some ways a peer or a colleague for my students, because we're all kind of in the writing mode together. So that's how I like to think about it. My creative work, it's something that's always happening on the side, but the mentality is something that I bring into the classroom.
So I was going to ask, how have you found room for writing poetry and doing your creative work as you've done all these different things over the last 2 years?
Yeah, it's always hard. It always occupies a slightly different space, I guess. But I tend to write best when I'm busy. I don't, I mean, I like downtime to be all the way down. But at the same time, the way I think about it is you need input to produce output. So I like to be living, I like to be interacting with people, which is why I maintain a position at the public library here as well. You just like to see people outside of the academy, and to just interact with like people of very different like walks of life in a way that you really can't, even at a university, as diverse as we might be, there's still kind of a set range of ages you're going to find in set positions, set demographics of all sorts of different types. So public library space is really interesting and generative for me.
Interesting. Do you ever like write down notes for things while you're working?
Yeah. I've read stories. I'm really been fascinated lately, like kind of the documents that go around professional institutions. Uh-huh. So I wrote a story recently that's, you know, still kind of private, but dealing with the interaction of like just emails bouncing around a department from workers in similar positions just responding to an HR rep. I'm trying to like manage a social problem that's not necessarily a problem so much as a situation, but through the circulatory system of like a bureaucracy, because that's always been kind of fascinating to me, the ways we write for these very specific genres and what information is outwardly stated and what is kind of generated in the very fact of writing something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, jot down stuff all the time. There's some really crazy stuff that happens at libraries because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people there. That's just what happens.
Do you want to talk about some of the topics you write about, or I know you brought a poem.
Sure. Yeah, lately I've been really interested. When I was in library school, I took a lot of classes on like youth literature. And I guess I didn't piece this together until like well after I was done with those classes. But my mother was an English major, and she always made a point of pride out of the fact that kind of the first book I read was Of Mice and Men. That's not a kid's book.
Yeah.
And it probably says something about who I am today, but so I've only ever kind of encountered this youth lit in like a critical perspective. So I've been thinking a lot about that and trying to kind of embody some of those voices in my writing, because I've always been fascinated in storytelling. But I've been particularly interested in the fact that we kind of stop formalized storytelling events after a certain age. Like formal events end at a certain age, but then as soon as you step into a bar or a cafe or something, people are just telling stories. So I try to bring kind of that perspective to my work as best I can. The idea that your writing is ultimately it's a medium. It's some sort of exchange. It's bringing people together, and it's kind of its own entity. That's it's derivative of some sort of social construct or social contract. And I'm kind of interested in, I guess, figuring out what that actually means. So yeah, that carries in both like my prose writing, but also I think my poetry, where it's kind of reflecting on the very nature of what it means to utter anything. Yeah, and to me, it's hard for me to like draw lines between life and the academy.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I think that might surprise people is like I have like an old motorcycle, and by riding old motorcycles, you need to know something about how they run. And I'm utter novice when it comes to like actual like machine work and stuff like that. But I've been really fascinated in seeing what 1970s era German engineers thought was the absolute correct way to build a motorcycle, because they're right, because this thing still runs, and I've done very little to help that. I've probably only done things to hurt that process. So I've been interested in kind of the physicality of systems. And, similarly, like bicycles, I think, are really kind of beautiful machines. And I think the ways we engage with the physical world through objects like that has become more and more important to me as I engage deeper in the knowledge work of, what we do here, teaching and writing, stuff like that. So stuff that actually binds us to a physical realm has been really important to me.
Cool. Would you like to read for us?
Sure. Yeah.
It sounds like if what you're describing your interests as far as these sort of bureaucratic circulations and these social circulations, and how you describe the motorcycle is sort of physically and verbally kind of mirror each other in a really interesting way.
Yeah, it occupies a lot of thought. And so yeah. It's been nice to like try to have a space where putting words to it is actually valued, too, because I think that's a nice thing about the academy. We can like geek out on something, and it just the very pursuit of knowledge itself is really fascinating to other people. All right.
That'd be great.
So, I mean, this poem has something to do with, I think, both storytelling and the idea of engaging with the physical world, and where that physical world ceases to be physical. So it's called Horse. The red-blooded American male gets a feeling, so he goes to look at horses. They aren't his horses, but he knows where they are boarded and pace every evening when the mosquitoes reclaim their kingdom. He rides a steel bicycle, assembled in Japan a decade prior to his life's opening credits. He is 30, arch about nothing, and sees the horses because he knows in the sear hole of his heart, yes, we'll say his heart, he knows in his heart that a 30-year horse is on a threshold, already kicking shit into the spirit world. In the morning, the dew collected on the horse's childlike eyelashes will flash like Christmas lights, like the souls that will usher the horse from its body. The evacuation will resemble nothing but the sweet breath of hay now warming the red-blooded American male's hand. The horse will fold like a card table after Thanksgiving dinner. But now, it sustains the red-blooded American male as he confronts his feeling. The sun is set. the day half done.
Lovely. Thank you.
Nice.
To close this short little interview, is there anything else you'd like to tell anybody?
No, I've been, been really just excited to be here. I was in some ways worried coming back and just like what it would be like to embody the same place. But I feel like I've been ushered into a new community, and that's been really interesting. So thank you very much for having me.
That's great. We're really glad to have you. And we hope we can keep making things a little bit better for all of us and make sure that we're all talking on a regular basis.
No, that's really great. Cool.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, John.
Next new NTT is Patrick Fadley. I've known Patrick for several years, but I still learned some new things about his non-academic interests.
I am Patrick Fadley. I was just hired on this fall of 2019 as a specialized faculty member here at the university. I'm teaching currently Rhetoric 101, 102, which is the so-called basic writing sequence here, which is a new class for me. Very excited about that. I'm originally born in Birmingham, Alabama, but I was raised in the Atlanta, Georgia area, came here for school, and decided I liked it so much that I wouldn't leave. I finished my PhD in 2018. I graduated December 2018. So
cool. Yeah.
So I was requested to go to China, to a city in China called Haining, which is near Shanghai. And I was there during the spring semester of spring 19, teaching an intro to British literature course there.
Okay, very, very good. Yeah. And you were there also, I think, with our colleagues, Marilyn Holguin and...
That's right. Marilyn Holguin, Kent Quaney, yep. And also Ryan...
Flanagan.
Flanagan, that's yeah. Right, yeah.
Yep. Okay, great. So can you tell us a little bit about your research interests?
Yeah, so my dissertation and research interest, well, my research interests broadly are at the intersection of religion and philosophy, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. If I had it to do over again, I might be a religious studies person. My dissertation specifically was on early modern religiosity, and more particular than that was on the problem of evil in that time period. Mm-hmm. So at that time period, it's often located as a place where secularization is happening, and I wanted to look at how the concept of evil is changing at the time.
Okay, and what are some of the texts that your dissertation engaged with?
Yeah, so I read some Shakespeare plays, Measure for Measure specifically, and then a bunch of epic poems. So Spenser's Faerie Queen, mm-hmm. Lucy Hutchinson's Order and Disorder, and a little bit of her translation of Lucretius, which was the first full-length translation of De Rerum Natura into English. Hmm. Very interesting text. Very good and still readable text.
Wow.
And then Paradise Lost.
Oh, of course.
A little book you may have heard of called Paradise Lost.
Very good. And outside of your immediate teaching and research, what are some things that you're involved in?
Yeah, so right now I'm kind of... I'm making a lot of art. So I just rented a space at the IMC, volunteering a little bit up there, and also getting involved in the union here, the NTFC.
Okay.
So those are my extracurricular projects for fall. I've been painting a lot, Dave.
Okay.
It's basically what it is. And I was painting so much that my apartment became kind of a wreck, and I wanted to move out of that space and into another space. Got a dedicated space to do that in, and it's become kind of somewhere between a hobby and a project, I guess you could call it.
Nice. Yeah. I did not know that you painted.
It's a newer thing, really.
Nice.
Up here, up here, up here, better times are here. Sunny smilers we must be, the optimist asserts. Let's hang the fat head to a tree. Cheer up, smile, nurse, the world's in the red.
Pallavi Gupta brings a wide variety of teaching experience and some interesting research to our program this year that I learned about when I interviewed her a couple of weeks ago.
So my name is Pallavi Gupta, and I originally come from Nepal. I came to the United States to pursue my grad school back in 2011, and I currently live in Bloomington, Illinois, with my husband and my seven-month-old daughter. I did my master's from Kansas State University, and then I went to Atlanta, Georgia for my PhD in English literature. That was in Georgia State University, and I got my degree last year with a focus on Victorian lit.
Very good.
And okay. I am currently a lecturer here at UFI, and I'm teaching first year composition, Ret 101, 2-2 classes, and enjoying those a lot.
Very good. So are you doing two section of Ret 101 and one tutorials?
Yes, yes, exactly that. Very yeah. Good. And I'm happy that both sections are back to back in the same classroom.
Nice.
So yes, I'm That's enjoying wonderful. That as well.
So did you also teach writing as a grad student or?
I did. I used to informally teach before I came to United States. Mm-hmm. I used to teach some kids from the neighborhood back in Nepal used to come to my house to ask me to editing questions or proofreading help and things like that. And then when I went to India for my undergrads, I did a little bit of teaching there as well. But formally teaching college level writing, college level students happened when I came here at Kansas State. So it has been 8 to 9 years that I've been teaching composition to students. And I'm, yeah.
Nice. That's great. Can you tell us a little bit? You mentioned that your PhD focused in Victorian lit.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of research you've done, what areas that you've been interested in?
Sure. I love talking about this. So I did my dissertation by focusing it on the novels of Charlotte Bronte. And she used to write in the 1830s and 1840s. Unfortunately, had a very short life. Otherwise, we would have seen more novels from her than the four that she wrote. And what I do is I look at some very bright figures from British and Nordic folklore, particularly the Selkies, and pair them, place them alongside Charlotte Bronte's heroines to study how these heroines react to the concepts of home, concepts like loneliness, like anonymity, and how concepts like community and these Victorian concepts, it really looking at all these heroines, their lifestyles and their lives from the perspective of these, by comparing them to fairy brides really illuminates those aspects. So that's what mostly my dissertation was about.
Nice. And so when you do that comparative work, what sort of insights come out about the relationship between the folkloric figures in the Bronte novels?
Mm-hmm. So I went to the folklore in the first place because Charlotte Bronte herself was an admirer of folk stories. She grew up listening to and reading stories from mythology and folklore a lot herself. And then I saw that she mentions in her letters some of these figures, and I thought, why not study that more? And what I found out from there is, and let me very briefly talk about the Selkie figure. So the Selkies are half seals when they are inside the sea, but they come to land to sunbathe in their human forms.
Mm-hmm.
So they take their seal skins off. And what happens, unfortunately, is fishermen who are on the watch out for these beautiful seal maidens hide their seal skin and obstruct their return to the sea. They marry them, and the Selkies are always living half lives. Their heart is in the sea. They are really seals, but they have to live as human beings, as wives. They do build families. They learn to love the families as well, but their hearts are always back to the sea. So what I realized are Charlotte Bronte's heroines are like these as well. They have to be the angels in the house. They have to be either the governess or the wife or the sister But all of these heroines, their hearts lie somewhere else. And this is something that I explore by these comparisons. And afterwards, I realized that the Bronte sisters, who were growing up in the moors of Yorkshire in the 1800s, really had this kind of a life themselves. They were away from London. They were away from even the city. They were part of nature so much. Mm-hmm. And their heart was somewhere else. And their focus was being on 19th century conventional women. So, yeah, I see those a lot.
That's really fascinating. And did your interest in folklore start with Bronte, or is it earlier?
Earlier, and I'm glad you asked me this. My grandfather used to talk to me a lot about folklore from the South Asian subcontinent. Mm-hmm. Growing up in a family that worshipped Hindu gods and goddesses, there are many interesting stories from mythology that you grow up listening to. And when I came across the Selkie figures and the fairy bride figures from British folklore, I realized, oh, the same or similar figures are there in Hindu mythology as well. Women who are sea fairies or who live in the waters and come to land, marry mortal men, and then after their purpose is solved, they return back to the waters. And so it really started with my grandfather, but I realized that folklore is more than what I had heard when I was small, it really spiked my interest.
That's fascinating. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us a little bit about your research. Is there anything you have to add?
Oh, yes, yes. So I was actually, my dissertation, I was presenting the chapters in conferences, and a university press approached me, and I am in very early stage of that conversation right now, thinking about a monograph revision. So that's something I'm excited about. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Yeah. And is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Oh yeah. So having been in academia for the last 10 years or more, actually, forever in my life, all I can talk about is those. But when you were asking me about folklore, my interest in that, I was also thinking about what I'm currently interested in and how my husband inspired that, because he's a professor of economics at Illinois State University. And all we talk about in the house, as our daughter will grow up, all she will hear is economics and English lit. So it was inevitable that the two of us combine what we have. And currently we are also looking at Jane Austen novels and looking at some economic concepts. Wow. And some of those theories really are helping us understand Austen more. So that's a future project both of us are interested in.
Well, that's really fascinating. Well, thanks so much for agreeing to sit down with us.
Oh, no. I had a great time, and thank you for inviting me.
Great.
I met with Kate Norcross, a recent graduate of our PhD program, one afternoon early in the semester. Kate and I already knew each other because I taught tutorials for her class, maybe the first semester she was here as a grad student. But I still found out things I didn't know, like that she's from Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Kate. Thanks for coming in to talk to us.
Hi. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah. So we've just been asking people to say, like, where did you do your undergraduate work? Where did you come from originally? How long have you been here? I know it's been several years because I worked with you your first semester.
Yes. Yes.
How long ago was that?
So my first semester of teaching was fall 2011, I think.
Oh my, yeah.
Yes, yes, and you taught tutorials for me, which was wonderful. My students' writing really improved over the course of that semester, getting to work with you.
Oh, that's really wonderful to hear. Okay, so where did you come from before that?
So I did my undergraduate degree about 45 minutes up the road in the town of Normal at Illinois State University.
Sure.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. I majored in English, and then my minor was actually in writing and rhetoric. So I've been thinking about student writing for a really long time, even though my research focuses on other things.
Okay. Are you from Illinois originally?
I am. I was actually born in Champaign, grew up in Normal.
Cool.
Okay, yeah. Me too. I was actually thinking too. Yeah. Okay.
That's cool.
Okay, very good. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your work. What is your focus of study?
So my PhD is in literature with a focus on medieval literature and culture. And specifically, my research is on Anglo-Saxon England. So that's about the 5th to the 11th or 12th century. And I'm particularly interested in the history of emotions, the ways that people in different cultures and times have thought about emotion differently, and the cultural work that it can accomplish. So my first book project is on empathy in Anglo-Saxon culture. Hmm. How did they use texts, writing or oral texts, to invite people to share the emotions of a fictional character? And why might they invite that kind of empathy? So I looked at all sorts of things. I looked at sermons and heroic poems and riddles about things like a shield or a hedgehog, to see how do these texts invite readers to share emotions, and what are they doing that for? Right now, I'm getting interested in theories of trauma in Anglo-Saxon culture, in the ways that texts are grappling with the aftermath of particularly devastating events like the Norman conquest. And so that's been a really fun direction to branch out into.
Okay, fascinating. One question I'm always interested with us is, how do you balance or juggle your teaching with your scholarly work?
In the best world, they feed off of one another, I think. Even if what I'm teaching isn't immediately connected. So right now I'm teaching business and technical writing, which hopefully is not a traumatic experience for my students. But I think the kind of intellectual curiosity and critical thinking that I bring to my research, ideally that then animates my teaching. As I'm doing one, it feeds off into the ways that I find myself designing lessons. And I think my research has always been interested in exploring something that we take for granted, like empathy, from a new angle. And that's also how I try to approach teaching, is taking a concept that might seem really normal to my students, like paragraph structure, and shifting the way that they look at it so that they concentrate in a new way and they make new connections.
And I would think that empathy would be a really important thing to have in business and technical writing.
Oh my goodness, it's one of the central values is understanding what matters to your reader and being able to meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, very good. And is there anything sort of outside of academia that you're interested in? Do you have any like hobbies or interests that you want to share?
Oh, sure. I love running. I run marathons.
Oh.
And I really enjoy jazz guitar. I'm in an ensemble right now. I'm still learning a lot, but I have a group of friends and we get together and just play different jazz tunes. And that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Neat. Do you ever like play out somewhere where people could go listen to you?
Not jazz guitar. I'm not quite at a point where I'm ready to do that yet. But I've played in musical teams for my church and in community events and things like that.
Okay.
Just that I'm very excited to be here. I think this is a great community to live in, and just the cohort of specialized faculty here is so diverse and warm, and really committed to being excellent teaching, but also to having a really broad research agenda, and so that's fun. I'm excited to be here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I only recently met Daniel Roche, who's a new NTT teaching in our BTW program. I was delighted to learn about some of his creative work as a playwright.
My name is Daniel Roche, and I am here teaching business technical writing.
Okay.
And I came here by way of the University of Colorado Denver in Beijing, China. I was in Beijing for about 4 years, and then I was in Guangzhou for 2 years prior to that.
So Guangzhou is where U of I has their satellite, right? Or am I confused?
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. I know that, there's some fantastic science-based universities down there.
Interesting.
Sun Yat-sen University, I know, has a relationship with Carnegie Mellon.
Okay, that's fascinating.
So I wouldn't be surprised that...
And you were there teaching, like, comp, or...?
Yeah, so I was with Colorado, which... It's a fascinating program because it's a 4-year program.
Mm.
So our students can be in Beijing the entire time, get their degree from CU Denver, and they've never been to the United States.
We have the same thing.
Has happened. So I was there teaching primarily composition and rhetoric, but then I also had opportunities to teach creative writing and theater, which leans a little bit more on my background.
Excellent. So that was sort of my next question is, where did you do your grad work and what were your specializations?
So I went to school at San Francisco State, and I studied playwriting. I did the MFA in playwriting, and then I completed an MA in English with a poetry dissertation.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, I lucked out, really.
Yeah.
because it came down to basically completing the MFA and the MA in about 4 years.
Wow.
If I was willing to take... I had to take like literary theory classes to complete the MA and that sort of thing. But
fascinating.
It was a great, it was a good experience. I think the university, just being located in San Francisco, creates some interesting work. So I know that the film school gets quite a bit of funding. And the theater department kind of like, hey, what's up, film school? Like, how's it going? What's going on over there? Like,
that's recognizable.
Yeah, totally.
And so, outside of teaching, do you write poetry? What sort of things do you do professionally?
I haven't actually written poetry in quite... Well, in fairness, I consider playwriting to be like the cousin of poetry.
Yes, absolutely.
but unfortunately, I haven't really sat down and written poetry in quite some time. When I was writing poetry, or at least my dissertation, I was actually taking government documents. At the time, I was working in accounting. So during the day, I would work in the accounting office, and then at night, I would go to class. So in kind of a way to mesh them, I took the 1040 individual income tax return, and I photoshopped all of the text off of it and photoshopped onto it like this prose poem called Anatomy of a Broken CPA.
That's amazing.
And the 1040 kind of falls apart at the end. And I think in hindsight, that was kind of the beginning of my slight, at least it planted the seed of my interest in working more with computers, which is more akin to what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. So can you tell us about a project you have going on now?
Sure. So what I'm working on right now, as in I just like closed my computer because I was... I'm a writer in residence at Catskills, New York.
Interesting.
And the residency is actually going on right now. I'm working with two other playwrights.
Wow.
And we are trying to put on an immersive experience based on Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Nice.
So the experience is based somewhat on... there's a show in New York called Sleep No More.
Okay.
Where the actors... it's like a cast of like 100. It's in a four-story building. All of the audience, they put on a mask, and you go wherever you want, and you can interact a little bit with the actors. For the most part, you still have to respect the performance. But if you are following an actor and you're no longer interested, then it's your prerogative to go into a different room.
Wow.
So we're trying to create something similar with Hitchhiker's Guide.
Amazing.
And I'm a part of it as a playwright, but I'm also doing the tech. So yesterday I actually just created Marvin the Paranoid Android in augmented reality and actually had a conversation based on voice recognition with Marvin. So I would write the dialogue and then I would actually program the keywords that I wanted the computer to pick up. And then Marvin would have his audio cues triggered when I would use the keyword.
That is fascinating.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
But it was also, I mean, the test, because I just had a meeting last night, and I sent them a YouTube video of it, which I'll be happy to show you. It's
okay.
You'll see my amazing acting skills. Shame. But unfortunately, the voice recognition software is our basic Microsoft voice recognition.
Yeah.
So with that, I was like, how's that going? Going.
That's funny.
Finally, it picks it up on like the third cue. I was like, okay, well, it's the thought that counts, I guess.
That's really fantastic. Just that combination of that's just creative work that is unlike, I think, any of the rest of our faculty are doing. So that's really fascinating.
It's what's crazy is that it is going on out there.
Yeah.
It's something that over the last 3 years I've had the opportunity to work with Columbia, primarily in their theater department as an assistant director and as a playwright.
Wow.
And with that, just being as a part of that university, you can see the potential. You can see how different departments can start to lean on each other to just create amazing new work. And I know that's something that I hope to explore here at the University of Illinois. I've already met with a couple of professors to discuss electronic literature, virtual reality, augmented reality.
Right.
Just to see, like, man, we've got so much talent here.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm proud to have said, like, I released my first, I guess, my game, my first electronic literary novel called Adventures in Morality.
Hmm.
And it's out on itch.io and Simmer.io and then itch.io.
Okay, very good. All right, well, thanks for sitting with me for a few minutes, and I know people are really going to be fascinated by some of that work, so welcome.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Cool.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Community.
Is your academic department filled with seething resentment?
Do ideas get squelched before they can blossom?
Do departmental meetings get bogged down with bickering and backbiting and status management?
Try a little Community.
Community makes departments run more smoothly and makes them stronger.
And smarter.
Community is the oil that makes the department run smoothly.
Don't be an asshole. Say hi.
Void where prohibited. Exceptions may apply.
Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed hearing about our new entities and will help us make them feel welcome here.
It seems like they have a lot to offer, and I'm excited to have them as colleagues.
Me too. We're working on getting our events scheduled for this semester. Please stay tuned for upcoming interviews and events with Mary Rose Cottingham and...
me. It's my turn to go. The New Academy Series podcast is hosted by Mary and me and produced by Mary, John Claiborne, and me. John Claiborne edits the podcast and is working on making it available in more platforms than just our website. We hope to have an announcement about that soon.
See you next time.